Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 2 of Clear to Close, your unofficial, official favorite mortgage podcast. I'm Alan Paris, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Brian Traeger, as well as our producer extraordinaire, Chelsea Mize, who is the content manager here at Maxwell. Today, we'll be discussing one of my personal favorite topics, marketing, and even better and more specifically, the oxymoron that is mortgage marketing. Let's be real. This is an industry that probably doesn't have the best reputation or wins many awards in the marketing department. This all for probably good reason, with complicated products, a complicated process, and regulation that makes enticing customers extremely difficult. With all that said, we wanted to have an honest discussion around what lenders do well, where there are opportunities to improve, and a scorecard of the average marketing process today as a consumer. From digital to branding, we'll try to cover it all with a few jokes and insights along the way. No interview guest today, but rather a thrilling roundtable. Enjoy.
Alan, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm excited about this podcast.
Likewise. It's a topic that needs to be talked about.
I know we have a lot of strong feelings about this topic today.
What is the topic?
We're going to talk about marketing.
Marketing.
Primarily in the mortgage space. And maybe the problems with it.
I mean, I'm glad we're talking about marketing because I'm generally unprepared to be on a podcast today. And marketing is probably the one thing that I can BS the best. And at least it comes natural to talk about.
That's good. Why do you say that?
So, I mean, my background has been in marketing since I graduated college. So for the past 10 years have been in marketing. Previously, I was managing large direct-to-consumer brands from a digital side.
Okay.
So financial services and insurance, PNC, managing some of the largest brands on there. You know, how do they go out in digital channels like paid search and paid social? What do we want those experiences to be? And then managing website performance at the same time of really optimizing the customer experience to get whatever the goal of the brand is that we are working with.
So in a high level, it's very much different than TV ads. It's newspaper ads, things you see in print. You're for the digital world.
Yeah, 100% digital world. And since joining Maxwell, have started to participate more in non-digital channels, but have always been on, there's a certain amount of people in the online ecosystem that are looking for a product or looking for a brand, and how do you make sure that those people get the experience they want to become customers? And really looking at marketing critically and figuring out, segmenting your audience and figuring out, you know, what path should every kind of cohort of customer be on in order to give the brand the most revenue at the end of the day, or whatever goal that they want to achieve. There were some brands that wanted to achieve, you know, engagement levels and branding and awareness levels, but many of them were focused on actually acquiring new customers at the end of the day.
So with your history, have you seen the influx of customers online? Of course, it's been increasing, but in our industry in mortgage, a lot of companies just don't focus on the online.
Yeah.
You know, they have 95% of their business driven by referrals. And the digital aspect is just something that might be part of the process with applications and uploading docs, but not the branding. So how did you take a step back and understand the differences there?
Yeah, it's something that I have to continually remind myself every day in managing marketing here at Maxwell, which is and not to go too deep into the complexities of marketing and the challenges you have of inside the organization of what's the cause of someone to become a customer, but attribution is this like messy term that of when you think about the steps before someone becomes a customer, there's a lot of experiences they have along the way with your brand, and it's very uncommon for it to be a one and done. Like I search for something, I see a brand for the first time, I visit their website for the first time, and I buy something right away. Like that, especially as the product becomes more complex, is not a common path. That might be a common path for like if you're ordering koozies online or whatever, but a low risk, low consequence product. But especially as products become more complex, you can think about like a scale of how complex products are and the consequences of getting them wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the normal path. And so what I try to remind myself to focus on every day is that you're going to have to create a lot of different experiences, and that customer is going to have a lot of touch points with you before they're comfortable purchasing your product. And I think that's something, especially in the mortgage industry, if you think about that, what I was just saying about that scale of complex products versus non-complex products, the mortgage is probably one of the most complex products and the most high consequential products that for a consumer, at least outward looking in, could encounter. And so, you know, even though the majority of, you know, especially our customers are retail focused customers, even though the majority of them are coming from a real estate agent to a lender as a referral, is that's not necessarily the only experience that they're getting with you before they trust you enough to use you as their lender.
Yeah, that's interesting. So a little bit about my background, and so I can challenge a little bit for you. I came from a large national lender and was in charge of corporate strategy, marketing, and technology there. And when I took over the marketing department, it wasn't because I had this huge marketing background. It was because we weren't doing anything there. We understood that times were changing, that we needed to dedicate more dollars in the budget to this, but the confusion of what to allocate those dollars to was across the whole company. No one really knew. And that's when you just talked about a lot of touch points for those consumers. Historically, where I came from, it was the only touch points on the branding were the logo that was on the door and the flyers that you'd hand out to your referral partners.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And so then when you have this ability to spend money on marketing, do you just make more flyers? Do you make more postcards and send them in the mail? Do you make your logo bigger on the building or on your office door? What do you do? And explain to me some of those other points that maybe the mortgage industry has, but more so what the rest of America has in general with their businesses.
Yeah. And I think that's probably a lot of companies, especially, you know, small and mid-sized businesses encounter as a challenge is like, well, what do I do? Like, what's my next investment? So like, if it was an easy decision of, you know, I mean, I think any business owner would be natural to say like, hey, if you encountered an option where you could go spend $1,000 and it's guaranteed you give you $10,000 of revenue, every business owner would be like, yeah, like, done, like, let's do it. Unless they should get fired if they don't want to do that. But I think the question comes to me of like, you're in your world that you that's driven a successful business. You get revenue, you've got you know, a flow of referrals and customers. So it's like, should I optimize those or should I try new things? And I think what I naturally see is a lot of companies go to social because like social is the sexy topic right now. Like Facebook's always in the news. You know, everybody has an Instagram account, especially millennials. And it's that's the next level of advertising. And I think, you can get successful business out of having a strong social presence, but that's not necessarily the only thing that you should do. I think, what's important for a company to do is to set their goals of and understand who their target customer is and start to figure out where can they best hit their target customer. And that might be community events. That might be, radio ads and hyper-targeted radio ads to get the best bang for the buck. But figuring out, you know, what do you want your goal to be out of your next marketing channel? Do you want your goal to be that, hey, I want to build awareness of in my region in order to drive more referrals? And if that's your hypothesis, then go try that and figure it out and run it for a period of time and see, did you get returns that were interesting to you? And I think that's probably the biggest thing that companies can do when they start to test into marketing channels is like understand what you want your goal to be at the end of the day. But make sure that goal aligns to realistically to what you're doing. Yeah.
So help me out here. When you have a lot of different avenues or touch points that you're talking that you want to do, when you have this new money in the budget, as like a scientific experiment, you usually want to change one variable at a time.
Yeah.
So do you go out and throw, hey, I'm going to do LinkedIn, promote our business for hiring. We're going to do Twitter to, you know, updated facts or whatever that might be, and Instagram for pictures of our customers at their new homes. And then you talk about the promotional side too, and maybe you go out and build some really cool content or flyer pieces to hand to your referral partners to generate the business for a discount on something. What is your suggestion on pulling a lever, and how long does that each lever take, and knowing what the mix is? Because I mean, if it takes time to generate those data points, you might not have a well-rounded marketing business for a year or two or three.
Mm-hmm.
How can you expedite that?
Well, I think it's always what I would recommend in that situation is to don't replace what you're doing today with something new. So in the sense of if you have a successful flow of referrals or you have your successful marketing channels today, is don't switch your budget from that to something completely unproven, but just allocate a portion to it so you don't lose your base of volume today. But I think the amount of time it takes, like I can't answer that question because I don't know the volume that a lender would have in a specific region or how focused they want to get. If they're a national lender, it's going to be a lot easier to learn quicker because you have a wider net of total kind of eyeballs that you could impact. And if you're a smaller lender, if you're just located in a given city, like, I don't know, Columbia, South Carolina, that's going to take longer to get that impact.
On the flip side though, I would imagine it's harder for a larger lender to really understand their target audience because they have so many, they're selling into so many different cities and demographics. And so, like, in your opinion, do you think it would be easier to understand your core audience and be impactful with some really targeted marketing for a smaller lender in a singular location?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the benefit of being geographically limited is, like, you can really, and especially if you're a part of that community, which I think in that example, it would be of like, if you actually live in the community that you're in, is like that can, you can really have an honest look at where do you get your influence of brands in the community? Do you always see it on TV? Like, is that how you chose your insert any service that you've used in your community or a product that you bought in your community? Like, how'd you choose what car dealer you went to? Was it because of TV ads? Oh, that's interesting. Maybe you should focus on targeted TV ads to build your awareness inside of your community. Did you get a brand idea because of radio ads that you listen to or newspaper, like whatever, you think about yourself as a consumer and think about where you received influence. And I think that can happen. I think that should be regardless of any companies. I think many times people in marketing or business owners forget that they're consumers as well. And so if you really think about, hey, the last few big products I purchased, How did I get comfortable? How did I get awareness of that brand? What little interactions did I have that made me excited to buy that product? And thinking of yourself as a consumer, you can all of a sudden start to be like, wow, like, you know, the experience on the website was the same, but, you know, I knew about this company because, you know, there was word of mouth and I heard radio ads and then they sponsored my kids' T-ball team and all that stuff. And then you can be like, wow, maybe that's how I can influence customers as well.
That's a really good point. It could be a really good exercise for people too, not just to sit themselves down as the head of marketing or if that's your side job or whatever it might be, but get your leadership team in a group or, you know, some top producers or something like that in a room for an hour, maybe even two, and have some lunch. And just brainstorm exactly what you just said. What was the last big thing that you purchased? And why did you do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's put that into action now. Like, for you, what are the channels that most make you gravitate towards a purchase. Yes.
You bought skis.
I have bought skis recently.
You're Colorado.
I have not. That was not my last big purchase.
Okay.
They're actually connected. My last big purchase was a diamond ring for my then fiance, now wife. And because I have a wife now,
congratulations,
I can no longer buy new skis. So they're connected. But so let's go down that example. So I bought a diamond ring, which was not cheap. But I had, I'm trying to think of the, so I bought it through an online ring manufacturer, like custom, you can design it online.
Okay.
And the experiences I had, so one was from a social perspective, and that was like a branding and awareness. So I saw them on Facebook, and I saw them on Instagram. And what my point of reference that I got throughout that through those channels was, one, what do they do? Like what is their product offering? What is their business? Two, how do they differ from the competition? Mm-hmm. And three, like, what do they stand for as a brand? But I by no means purchased the product through Instagram. That created me to start being interested in this company, and then followed them for a while. And you know, I followed their social presences and everything. And then throughout those times, I frequently visited their site and messed around and, you know, looked at different products to understand price points, etc.
That's really interesting, because if you take a step back and try to relate that to a different type of high financial purchase, like a house, mm-hmm. they're similar in terms of down payment size and a ring, right? Yeah. Very different relationship that you'll have, hopefully, with the house. But it's...
One eventually accrues value and you sell it and it's a piece of equity. Another thing just stays in its own form.
But that goes for the change of how traditionally people went and bought diamond rings. You go to a mall. Every kiss begins with K, right? And now you got yours through an online ad and then started to look more and more and more. And when you talk about buying a diamond ring, there are a lot of things that you have to consider.
Yeah.
Credibility being a massive one, and you need to have your standards to where you decide them and then match them with whatever company you're going with. Now, the same can be said with other financial products, like buying a mortgage. Although the diamond is sparkly, it's nice, it's beautiful. Buying a mortgage, there's nothing. Like, the realtor already sold the house to you. Now you're signing a mythical thing that just takes part of your paycheck. You don't see the mortgage ever.
Well, and presumably you're not going into major debt to buy a ring. So it's, if anything, it's an even more intense mm-hmm. iteration of what the process you described.
And if you are going to debt, it's probably a much higher interest rate. You don't really have collateral.
I'm curious to know how long you were engaging with the brand, or engaging is a bad word here. How long you were vetting the company and looking at their website and looking at their brand before you actually spoke to someone at the company?
Yeah, it was a long time. I think it was probably 6 to 12 months. I was engaging with the brand, and that encounter was the most frequent channel was me following their social feed, and visiting their website multiple times to see, like, what I was trying to figure out is, like, what the product that I want, I had an idea of what I want it to look like. Are they capable of making that? And then slowly, as it became the time to start to consider the purchase, I didn't shop anywhere else. Like, I'd been sold from a brand perspective, and I knew they could make the product. And then when I was ready to pop the question, I was ready to go with them. And so I think one of my takeaways, and I think could be related to the mortgage industry, is it was a complicated purchase. And what I see a handful of times from this even large lender, like some of the largest banks selling their mortgage services, is they try to convince someone to apply for a mortgage via Instagram. And like
with an Instagram post or targeted ad with a dog in it.
Exactly. Like they know I'm 30 years old. They know I have a dog, and they send me an Instagram ad that says like, get your dog a great backyard.
Bring Fido home.
Apply for your mortgage today. And I'm like, no, like,
so that's not effective for you.
No, it's not effective.
It's absolutely
for me at
not
all.
Effective for me either.
And I can only imagine how terrible the return on ad spend is there. So by no means don't partake in social if you want to partake in social, if you think that's an important piece in your customer's journey with you to purchase a product. But be thoughtful on like how often do you buy something in a channel at the spur of the moment that's this as complex as the mortgage industry. And so instead of running like apply now ads, why don't you talk about how you're different as a lender? Like, there are a lot of lenders, and that's probably one of the biggest things I've experienced in the mortgage industry is how fragmented once you get out of the top 10 lenders, how many lenders there are in the United States. And so as a owner of or a manager of a lending company, it's on you to start to really articulating why you're different. And I think that's hard because
that is hard.
It's a lot just on interest rate, and it's a lot just on, you know, getting the mortgage to buy my dream home. But I think the challenge would be like, how are you different? And how do you want to articulate that to a customer like the Diamond Company did to me, that you stand for something different or that you're going to have a different experience with us? So when it's time and you either get a referral or you choose to go with that lender, it's like, yeah, I'm with you guys. Like, you guys are my experts. I'm trusting you. Let's do this.
I think that trust is a big part of that equation that I don't often see conveyed well, especially on social media in ads when it comes to mortgage lenders. You know, I think especially for millennials who came into adulthood, you know, right around the crash, there's a lot of skepticism, and, you know, there's not a great, the financial literacy baseline in America is not great either. And so for at least for me personally, if I'm vetting a mortgage lender, it's going to take me a while to believe that they're not full of it. You know, like, how do I know that I can trust them with this massive financial decision? How do I know that they're going to be a good resource to educate me about the process, so I don't feel like I'm going in blind and I'm just trusting someone to make this massive decision for me? And so, yeah, and an Instagram ad with a corgi in it, like, doesn't do anything to build my trust or help me learn something that will make me feel more confident in going with him.
Well, but however, if it was an Instagram ad with a pit bull in it, I would be sold. The smiles, just kidding.
Well, that's where the mortgage industry is really good. They're really good at building relationships. Historically, you know, a lot of these came through face-to-face referrals. So the real estate agent has somebody that they know, that they trust, that gets the job done, and they refer their buyers to that person. And that protects their commission, that protects the borrower, it protects the whole cycle. And a lot of times with the marketing that we see out there is further behind in those types of companies that are more relationship driven, because they're getting those referrals at a handshake. They're not getting those referrals from online leads, and nor do they really want them. So it's kind of understanding the landscape and how things are changing, but also within themselves, do they want to go all in on their face-to-face aspect of their business?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the interesting things of for mortgage lenders, I think, as you were talking about the referral side of things, is you have, and I would love to hear your experience in the lender you worked for, is you almost have two marketing and brands you have to manage. So there's one of, you know, the brand of what a consumer or a borrower sees of you to drive that loan purchase. But you could argue for a lot of these retail focused brands that one of the biggest things you can do is be advertising and what's your brand to a realtor. One, are those the same or are they different? But, you know, if you pop around mortgage lending company websites, there are some good ones and there are some really bad ones. And
there are, and
I feel like the good ones are fewer and farther in between.
Yeah. And I think, but does that, do you, I'm interested in your opinion, is do you think what your website looks like, how professional it is, the thoughtfulness and the quality of your brand, does that impact a realtor's decision to go to send you, the loan officer in your company, the lead or not?
Yeah, it's a great question. And my experience, we were all across the country. So there were pockets that, yes, that absolutely happened, where we'd go on site and visit with real estate agents. And they would say, you know, I'm simply not ever going to refer anybody to you guys. Why? Like, your website is trash. And that's when we started to realize, okay, let's understand and take a step back what our borrower journey is. And what we realized, because 90% of our business came through the referral, real estate agent referrals. So when you look at a borrower and you understand that they're looking at the house that they want to buy online, they go to the website of the real estate agent or Zillow or any of those other aggregators of listing pages, and they're sitting there just searching around for beautiful properties. They're playing around with the mortgage calculator and how much they can afford, and looking at little pockets and neighborhoods that they might want to live in. And over time, and maybe 2 months, 3 months later, they build the courage to go talk to a real estate agent. And that real estate agent then guides them through the process, but they've been on a beautiful website looking at beautiful homes. Then they hand it over to the mortgage person and they go to a website that was built in the 1990s. And that experience falls off. For us, it did. And we said, oh, wow, this is bad. So we wanted to up our standards to what the real estate company standards were. And that was our driver, is that borrower experience. We needed it to stay along this line. We didn't need to be above and beyond everybody else in the industry. We just needed to be level
for a consistent
experience. Yeah. It just happened to be that those real estate brands that we were affiliated with had beautiful websites. So we had to go the extra mile to take a step up.
I bet that was difficult. I mean, it's easy to market a house that's sexy and, you know,
right.
You know, there's definitely something to be said for, I don't know, like a mortgage is so intangible in comparison to a home. And so, yeah, that's a lot of pressure on a mortgage lender to create something that's as, you know, visually appealing or aesthetically pleasing. So what was the process like once you guys were like, hey, we need to up the ante on our website? Like, where was your focus? Was it, you know, streamlining your design? Was it?
First and foremost, it was budget. We didn't ever budget for this. We had a website that was, I don't know, a couple hundred dollars a month to maintain. It had our logo and, you know, find your loan officer here. And that's pretty much it. Had a mortgage calculator, but it wasn't good. And so before we can figure out what we wanted the website to be to level up. And again, none of us had marketing experience, you know, maybe through business college and taking a class, but no one had the experience. So we just had to figure out there, how could we outsource this? I don't need to hire a web developer. Even though there was a couple on staff that had some experience, they were more admins of the website than creators of the website. And so finding the right partner to create the website was just massive. And then you go in and just to
go a little deeper on that, did you guys choose an agency or did you choose a freelancer, or when you chose the right partner to do the website, what's that look like? Because that's one thing I want to talk about, you know, afterwards is, you know, I think it's intimidating on building a new website.
Yeah.
For people, they think, oh, I gotta have a developer, I gotta have a designer, and maybe even pay them full time on staff to do it. When in reality, I think there's some tricks and some hacks to get a good quality website, especially in today's world. But what decision did you guys make?
Yeah, so I'm a frugal person in general. And so my first reaction was, all right, who are we paying today? And go talk to them and say, hey, you know, threaten your business against them too. And say, hey, this is a bad experience for us right now. We've been paying you for 2 years. We need it to be better. We need it to be with the times. And lucky for us, they were amazing. They said, I agree with you. We don't understand why we haven't had a relationship with you guys. We've reached out every once in a while and we've had zero engagement. And thank you for reaching out. So it was mutually beneficial where they were ready to take us to the next level. And so financially, it made a ton of sense for us to just dive a little bit deeper with them, mm-hmm. than to go and look at all these different businesses. Now, we did that. We had to do diligence as part of our vendor management process. We weren't just going to pick one company and stick with it forever. It's good to see what's out there. But because we had that relationship, because we hadn't engaged with them much, they felt like they owed us a favor. And so talking to the people that you're working with today is always a huge benefit. And rather than just pulling the plug and starting over. And that was just wildly beneficial for our website design.
Yeah.
And then they took the lead on it. They're professionals in that space. They could create a wireframe of a website in 30 minutes.
So they were leading the kind of graphic design push in that circumstance?
Yeah. And they wanted us to have as much input as possible. So first it took me, you know, a couple hours to understand what a wireframe was. And then I could prepare for that meeting. And we had a couple of people. We had a social media expert that we hired on the staff and an IT guy. And we just brainstormed and we talked about the borrower journey and what they would come to our website for and what they would engage with. And starting to build those aspects of the website was really critical.
I'm getting a flashback of Brian sitting at his desk. He gets a meeting on, you know, wireframe discussion. He's like, oh, shit. Google search.
What is a wireframe?
A wireframe.
Yeah, so braces pictures came up, dentistry stuff. I didn't know what I was doing.
I mean, I think, you know, I think one thing I want to talk about is opportunity. So say someone wants to build their own website. I think what you're laying out is really true, which is you kind of have to trust professionals to do it. Like, you don't have to create the perfect website in your own brain. What's beneficial is organizing what message and what content you want to articulate on your website, and then having an opinion of which websites you like. Like, as a consumer, we go back to, like, think of yourself as a consumer. I always have website crushes.
Yeah.
And I, oh my gosh, who is your brand crush, Alan? I have no idea.
My current brand crush right now is Wealthfront.
We love Wealthfront.
I'm a proud Wealthfront customer. And talk about, like, a brand winning you over. Like, I love
you're
their
smitten
brand.
Right now.
I know. I'm
God,
blushing.
Their website is so sexy. Like, the illustration, the fonts, the colors. Like, I feel like we look at Wealthfront's website, like, 3 times a week.
Yeah, and I think, like, they, what...
I have goosebumps talking about Wealthfront's website right now.
And so, I think, you know, as a... Again, put yourself in the consumer point of view. What brands do you love? What brands do you get excited to go to their website? What brands' websites win you over? And you're like, yes, I'm ready to purchase products. And give that as inspiration to whoever your designer or outsource team is. Like,
yeah.
You don't, I think it your natural reaction is like, oh, I've got to build this website. This is going to be complex. What pages do I want? All this stuff. But like, they're experts at it, and let them help guide you to the website of your dreams.
And someone who does it professionally too can, you know, sometimes I feel like, because I keep a desktop folder on my computer where I screenshot websites that I like, or, you know, I have a brand inspiration folder. I have a folder that's copywriting inspiration. And sometimes it's really difficult to articulate what it is that you like about something, but someone who does it professionally can kind of tease that out. Like, what are the aspects that you like? What are the aspects that you don't like? Like, what's effective about this? And what are you trying to emulate in a way that's really hard to do yourself if you're not a designer, if you're not professionally trained?
Yeah, and I think a big piece before you go down the path of, say, you're ready for a new website is understanding what is your business model today and being honest on what your business model is today, and thus what goals do you want your website to achieve for you? Mm-hmm. So, like, your website is going to be very different if you're a direct consumer shop compared to a retail focused shop. So think about, like, as we talked about before, maybe the most value of your, if you're a retail focused lender, maybe the moat that's 90%+ referral volume, maybe your website's most valuable step in the customer journey is getting them to trust you and to take that refer. So the realtor says, hey, I want to refer you to Bob at XYZ Lender. And so it's natural for, if someone did that to me, I would type in xyzlender.com.
Yep.
And if they didn't seem trustworthy or if they didn't seem professional, I would be like, well, maybe I'll look around at some other people and get my realtor's input on some other lenders that maybe I'm more aware of.
Can you give some specific examples of, like, what a red flag would be that would kind of make you say, hey, I don't know if I trust this brand? Because I'm interested if that differs from person to person.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
I've got an example.
Yeah.
an out-of-date profile picture. That is a classic, where you go onto the website and you see, hey, loan officer, and then you go meet them in person, and they look completely different. You're like, what?
They're still you're using like, their your headshot graduation.
Your headshot was taken at an Olin Mills and a Sears.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I got mine done at a Target. But that would be one thing for me is consistency, right?
Yeah.
Lender catfishing.
Yeah. Well, it's effectively these landing pages for loan officers are business cards. Mm-hmm. They're souped up business cards. And what I love is having a referral source on there. And whether that be survey results, hey, this is a 5-star loan officer, or you know, things like that, or a bio about them that's really cool, and maybe not necessarily about their history in the space, but them as a person. Those types of things can really help solidify them as a human being and not just someone who's going to sell you to get a commission. Mm-hmm. And that's very important.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably easier for me to say the things that would make me feel more confident in a lender rather than what are the biggest turnoffs. In terms of turnoffs, I think like there's a few, like I as someone in marketing, if the website clearly hasn't been updated in
Comic Sans headlines.
Yeah, like if it's or even if worst case, if there's like a copyright and it's like 2005 or something, it's like, how are you not maintaining this important piece of your business?
Similarly, for me, obviously, I mean, I'm a content marketer, so I words are most important to me, but a super cheesy or aggressive tagline is an immediate, like, these people don't, I can't take that seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for sure. In terms of things that are positives, I think
statistics, reviews.
Yeah. You know, not 5-star reviews, just, but organic reviews or testimonials from customers. And then rather than if I was visiting a lender, rather than, seeing like what the daily rate is or the current APR or whatever it is, of that's going to affect the price point, I would rather try to find like what makes this lender different and what do they stand for as a company. I love lenders who have like company profiles and have like all their loan officers and you can see their photos. Hopefully it's not their high school graduation photo. But I love seeing the company. Like it makes it more tangible that like there's humans behind this business and it's someone that I can trust and that they're sharing who works for the company. They're proud of who works for the company. But I think the differentiation piece is a big thing. And I think that's probably where it's not easy. Especially as you're selling a mortgage, but I think as a business owner, it's on you to really figure out what is different. Is it the experience? Is it the quality service? Is it the timeliness? Like, what is the thing that makes you unique to the other lenders down the road? And if you can articulate why you're different, and I align with that, then I'm more trusted in it.
And we have what, 7,000 mortgage companies in America, actually probably double that. Not all of them can be that different, right? So a lot of people will tout that they have local processing, local underwriting, that it is everything local, or that their customer service is bar none. We can close in 15 days. And so it's coming outside of those pieces of the business and finding differentiation that's truly different. Maybe your differentiation is that you guys all play volleyball together, you know, or that you have an amazing company culture. Maybe it's that you guys are in the community. You go to the VFW every Wednesday and talk shop and play poker, but also are the mortgage people or you know, those types of things. You got to think outside the box with your differentiation, because if you're claiming to be different and then Alan, you and a state over is claiming to have the same differentiation. You may not be competing with each other, but they can just go online and figure that out.
I don't think it's necessarily, it's not necessarily about, you don't have to be very different from the mortgage lender next door. You just have to articulate what you stand for more clearly than they do on their website. And I think there's such a gap in the mortgage industry in particular, like relative to other industries that I've been in, where, you know, it is a relationship focused business. It's about the humans and lenders are really good at articulating that in person, and I think they just need to view digital marketing as a bridge to more clearly share that to their audience. And so right. I think even just tweaking a little bit and getting a little bit better at letting people on the internet know what you stand for and who you are. You don't have to be different from your neighbor, but neither of you are doing a great job right now putting that on the internet. And so just improving your process a little bit and improving your footprint on the web a little bit, that'll go a long way, I think.
Yeah. And I think when it all gets boiled down is one of the biggest things in good websites versus bad websites, and I think it's focusing on the differentiation and focusing on a few key points, is you don't need to explain everything on your website. Like, right. You don't need to give every piece of advice from A to Z in the mortgage process and every possible path and option. And I think it's figuring out, when someone visits my website, again, based off whatever my business model is, what are they likely evaluating, and what are they need confirmation on before they purchase the product, and hitting those points clearly and articulating it well and building that trust for someone to go down the path with you.
It goes back to what you said earlier about what is the goal? What is the goal of this marketing piece? And the topic right now is the website. If your goal is to get them to come to a face-to-face meeting, then yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You don't want to explain the whole process, because part of that education aspect for that company is face-to-face. It's building that relationship in the office or over the phone and talking through it, because the mortgage process is so incredibly complex and each borrower is different in wanting to know how deep of the complexity that they want to understand. Some person is just like, hey, I have a house that I want. You're the lender. Get it done. And the other person can come in and say, hey, I need to know about basis points. I need to know about, do I buy up the rate? Do I sell some off? How much down payment do I need? 10%, 15%, 23%? I don't know. There's all these different things, and they can, the loan level pricing adjustments that could affect their interest rate by 25 basis points. And a lot of people don't want to know that. So what is your goal? Effectively get that on your website and then execute on the other half of the goal. And if that's to do everything online, awesome. But you're going to be competing with people like Quicken Loans, who have a $200 million marketing budget. If you are on the other side of the sphere, drive them to the face-to-face meeting, and maybe that's the content that you have on there too.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. I think, you know, let's focus on kind of retail referral heavy lenders, is probably your biggest asset and the product of your differentiation is the quality of your team and your loan officers.
Yeah.
Like, the reason why the majority of people still choose to have a loan officer is the expertise and the guidance throughout the process. And that's also why at Maxwell, we believe heavily in the loan officer and want to empower the loan officer, is like that. We think we're betting on the loan officer having value in the process. And so as a retail focused lender, who's not a direct to consumer shop, or not a online, like a Rocket Mortgage, is like the loan officer is your unique value. And hopefully if you've built your team well, you have the best team in the area. And so use that as your asset and pitch that product and get people convinced that, God, I got to meet with these people. Mm-hmm. Like, I went to their website. They've got the most experience. They've got the reason why they do business. They've got their differentiation in the market. And they've got the best team, and I'm going to meet with Joe because he's going to guide me through the process the best.
I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some crazy stats on, you know, I'm obsessed with websites. There are there's some crazy stats on the importance of a website in how people purchase products. Like, there's a stat that says 42% of online shoppers base their opinion on a website on overall design, and 52% did not purchase anything purely because of the aesthetics of a website. So, you know, even if you're not selling even if you're not selling shirts and hats on a online shop, like, your website has an impact on people. I, as a consumer speaking for myself, I know if someone referred me to a lender and I did not like their website, they would need to win me over. Like, I'm not saying it's game over, but they're gonna have to work harder on why should I go with them.
Oh, I think for me, unless they were referred to me by someone that I really trusted, if their website looks terrible, like I can't get past it, because I just have this, and sometimes it's frustrating because I can't get past it. But if your website doesn't look professional, if you can't take the time to put the effort into making your website look at least semi appealing, then I don't necessarily think I can trust you as easily to think that you're going to care about me and what I want. And I think from a lot of the lender websites that I see, I think there's a misconception that more is better. If anything, you know, your website doesn't have to be insanely beautiful and, you know, a bastion of graphic design expertise, but I think just like paring it down and keeping it very simple, good, clean fonts, easily readable, get rid of the clutter. You know, I think more is not always better when it comes to websites.
Yeah, I think you're right. When you look at luxury websites, it's simple. It's crazy. I never realized that until I think it was some podcast I was listening to that explained that elegance is simple, and it's kind of interesting. But you don't need to throw out 6 graphics on one little page that all contradict each other, and colors that are also not complementary and have hard breaks between the green and the blue, or, you know, and just making it a little bit more simple.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, there's you can search like the impact that colors have on people's buying decision. Like, there's a reason why all or 90% of fast food companies have red in their color. And it's because that creates a feeling of urgency and deal and quick purchase that people lean towards.
And I know that blue is very popular,
yeah,
especially
blue,
for financial
blue, like,
companies.
Yeah, is all on trust. That's why, you know, to divulge our secrets, that's why blue is a color of Maxwell as well. Is like that, you know, a lot. That's why a lot of financial companies have blue. Green and like symbolizes wealth, and now has recently started to symbolize like eco-friendliness and environmental friendliness and everything. But and you know, and like black is luxury. That's why Uber's black. That's why you go to like Ritz-Carlton and there's like not any color on the website except for like the pictures that they're showing, but their brand is just black and white. And so, I'm not telling everybody to go rebrand themselves, but I think those, which colors you highlight, can have a big impact.
Pay attention to how color and design draws your eye to things. You know, I there's a reason that buttons that convert well are typically a contrasting color to the rest of what's on the website, because your eye automatically is drawn towards the color that is different from everything else that you're seeing.
There's a problem with that though. And like the example that I had with my experience was I didn't understand any of that. And I was the head of marketing, right? I was kind of filling a band-aid in the position, but how do you get that knowledge without going and getting a degree or, you know, spending a ton amount of time learning? Is it outside consultants coming in? Is it how do you learn all of that in order to make an impact on your own business without spending a ton of money and time?
Yeah, and I think in regards to website performance and ease of use and first impressions, I think your own network of family, friends, and friends of friends can be incredibly valuable. I know when we would like design a new website for an auto insurance company, we would like send it out to all of our family and friends and be like, what was easy? What was hard? What'd you like? What you didn't like? What were your first impressions? And you can do like a quick Google form. And it's amazing what you'll learn from like 10 people outside of your company visiting your website, for the positive and for the negative. I think like when you're in your website all the time, you slowly start, or at least I slowly start to hate the website because I look at it all the time. But at the same time, you also become immune to problems on the website. Or like little difficulties of how you actually go through the process. From a color perspective and from like a branding perspective, I think there's a site like Upwork, I think, has kind of revolutionized the ability to connect to freelancers and to contract work. Like if you can go to Upwork and post your position. I think it's Upwork.com. But I've used it for some personal projects as well as some business projects of like getting outside help of one designers, brand experts to help give advice or direction on where you can go. Or you could purchase someone to do a whole new rebranding or whatever if you choose to. But I don't think you need to. I think I would approach this as being, I think most lenders probably don't have a ton of resources, to dedicate towards a rebrand, or in resources being from a monetary standpoint and from a personnel standpoint. And so if that's the case, like, be scrappy with it. Like, prioritize the things you want to get done. Go find the best bang for the buck designer or brand expert. And you don't need to get the sexy agency to do it. You'll be amazed at, I think, what you can achieve doing it on a pretty small budget. And I think the biggest thing that I want to hit on, though, is to be consistent. And once you get your changes, if there are going to be changes from a branding position or from how you message your differentiation, is make sure that's consistent in every experience that a consumer gets. That's one of the biggest things from a brand that makes you stand out for the long run is consistency. Like, you think about Coca-Cola or whatever, they don't always run the same ads, but they've always got the same little jingle at the end. They haven't changed their logo in whatever, how many years. There's things you expect, you're like, yeah, that's a Coke ad. Or like that, the same with Apple. Like, there's things you expect and you're like, yeah, that's definitely Apple. Mm-hmm. And so once you create what you believe for, what you stand for, preach it and make sure the person gets the same experience all the time.
I like that.
Well, and to go back to your original question real quickly, sometimes I think there's a misconception that all marketers are, you know, classically trained, or that you have to have studied marketing in school to do it well. And, you know, I got my degree in film studies, super, super lucrative and useful. You know, I'd never had any marketing experience until I was actually doing it. And now, you know, I've been in marketing for 6 years now, and I understand it now. And most of that was just trial by fire. It was Googling a lot. It was learning on my feet. And so I think people need to not be intimidated by marketing because they're not marketers, or because they didn't go to school for marketing, because there are a lot of people that just learn it as they go. And I think, you know, you're a classic example of that. You can do a lot just by hitting Google hard and, like Alan said, being scrappy and figuring out the best way to make your resources go really far.
What's really cool about that too is if you can partner with a small team. I've noticed that every city has really small companies that are extremely good at marketing. Go talk to them for a couple hours. They will get the creative juices coming from you. It's kind of funny. We did that one time and I didn't realize how much of a marketer I really was until I met with them, and they just asked the right questions. They got it out of you. And then before you know it, you're sitting there trying to go to sleep and you're thinking about marketing and branding. It's wild, but you do have it inside of you. You just gotta maybe find the right way to get it out. If that's doing personal research, if that's hiring a company to come in and talk for 2 hours, or maybe it's hiring that small team of two people to be your graphic designers and social media experts for the foreseeable future. And collectively, if their rate per hour is expensive, they're still probably less than hiring a team or even one person. And the bang for your buck that you're going to get from that far outweighs the time that you're going to spend figuring it out yourself.
Absolutely. And another tip I'll give that I've done in the past at being on a smaller team and with a limited budget, you can find a really good graphic designer who is either just out of school or is still in school, you know, someone in a master's of fine arts program, you know, right out the gate when you're trying to find clients, especially if you're planning to work on a freelance basis, you want to build a portfolio and potential clients want to see that you've done work for other actual clients as opposed to just, you know, an assignment for school. And so going to your local college or a graduate design program and reaching out to their program director and just, you know, emailing their point of contact and asking, hey, like, do you have any graphic designers looking to build their portfolio? Because those people typically are going to have a much lower rate and still do a really good job because they're trying to prove themselves as a designer.
It also allows that lending company or the manager to have their marketing be a variable cost and not necessarily that flatline fixed cost of a team or a person, but saying, hey, I have a content piece that I need because this promotion is coming out. And if it's a flyer, so be it. Pay per flyer, per hour, you know? Don't just have people be bored all day long waiting for the next thing to come out. If you outsource it, it could be very beneficial for your planning and to just dip your toe into the water to see what that payback is and what you can do as future plans. And then you get it more in the budget and et cetera.
Yeah, especially if you're trying to prove internally the need to spend on marketing, you know, doing it incrementally, doing it on a project by project basis and proving the value that comes from spending money on marketing and building that up over time.
Yeah, I mean, I think the amount of the volume and frequency of pieces is determining whether whether you need a large budget and whether you need on-site staff or whether you can do outsourced help. And I think being honest on, hey, like maximum, even if we double what we do, we're going to be doing two flyers and one revamp of a website every month and year respectively, is like that doesn't justify hiring a marketing team. You know, there's some companies who are need to revamp every single week, and that definitely justifies having your own marketing team. So just being honest in what do you want to achieve and what's your dream world of what you think your ideal marketing output is and the changes you'll be making throughout the time, I think is valuable in helping you make that decision.
So we talked a lot about the website and what a managerial team can do to increase their marketing strategies and mm-hmm. such. I'd love to talk briefly about, as an individual, what you can do in your professional life to market yourself. And so that's taking the branding and everything that we've talked about today and using those as arrows in your quiver and what you need to differentiate yourself. And how do you do that? Do you care about it, first of all? If you don't, then that's it. But if you do, but you don't know how to do it, how do you throw yourself out there? Similar to Alan, what you talked about is of having website crushes. I think a really important thing to do is go on LinkedIn or Twitter and find somebody, maybe not in your industry, but something really close. So go find a real estate agent and notice what those people do on social that sparks some interest for you. So there's one guy I know, he's a real estate agent in Miami, and he has the benefit of having, you know, Florida as his background on his videos, but he goes out and does really cool things. Like he'll take a boogie board and run into the ocean with fully clothed. And the topic is the topic will be, you know, I'm diving headfirst for my clients, you know, or something like that, that just runs into the ocean. And it's not as cheesy as that, but it gets the job done. I get really excited just to see his updates on LinkedIn on these little videos. He went to the Miami Heat backstage or something and took a tour around. And at the end, he happens to do real estate. It's not that's his his main thing. But I love the idea of people taking their own identity and putting it out there on the internet or something different. And it's really hard to come up with that yourself. But use what your company is doing in marketing and branding to drive ideas for yourself.
Yeah, I think it's the same, you know, it's still hitting, you know, you yourself as a loan officer is your brand, like your independent business, you're part of this bigger brand, but you have to go sell yourself as well. And I think you're right, like in LinkedIn there's a ton of individual thought leaders and stuff like that like have created brands around themselves. Like you think about one that I always see is Gary Vee. He's like this inspirational, like self-business entrepreneurial guy.
Or that Todd Duncan's of the
world. Yeah, Todd Duncan is one as well in the space. And they, you know, they're opinionated. They have, and that's what people have expected from their brand is like strong opinions, you know, helpful advice on social. What, and you know, that doesn't necessarily need to be your brand. but you need to stand for something and do something different from the competition. Maybe your brand is what you do as a follow-up when somebody finally closes on their home. Like, maybe you send them on, like, a staycation or something for congratulation. I don't know what it is, but like your own little uniqueness to the experience. And I think just highlight that and again, like a brand, it has to be consistent. It can't be an every once in a while thing that you do. You know, if you're gonna make social your thing and you want to build your brand via social, great. You got to post there a lot.
Yeah.
You got to have a similar experience of what people expect from you. That will slowly and over time create differentiation and have compounding benefits.
And I think it's important to, you know, you can have these thought leader crushes on LinkedIn and, you know, watch those people, look at what they do and take inspiration from that. But I think it's important to not view it as trying to emulate exactly what someone's doing, because the best personal brands, the people who are really successful at it, it's because there's authenticity there. It's because it derives from who they actually are as a person. So, you know, you can polish your personal brand, but it still needs to be uniquely you and needs to feel authentic, because that comes out, that you can read through in authenticity.
It's really a great point, because easily. Like Alan said, you got to be consistent. If you're going to burn out if it's not you, and you need to be able to consistently do it over time. And in order for that to happen, it has to be you. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you're just faking it forever and everyone will see right through to your exact point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people get pushed into, and businesses at the same time get pushed, and you can take this for your whole life, is like you get told what you need to go do. But if that's not a part of you naturally, then like you said, you're going to burn out of it really quickly. Like people always say about, oh, you got to be on social. You don't necessarily always need to be on social. Maybe you're the best at like in-person meetings, or you're the best at,
or your email newsletter is awesome.
Or your email newsletter or whatever it is. Like whatever is motivating for you and is natural to you, go be the best at that.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think a piece of it is like, you shouldn't go into, you know, I'm going to be like this social like thought leader and it's going to revolutionize my business. Like you should do it to add value to your customers and or your future customers, and thus it needs to be natural to you, and it's slowly going to accrue value over time. Like by posting one video on LinkedIn, jumping into the ocean and
yeah.
saying you're going head first for your clients or whatever it is, like he's not doing that just for like, I need to get an additional lead. Like that's what he gets energy from. That's who he is. And slowly people are like, that's a branding and awareness play that he's doing. But it's gotta be you. Like you can't fake it. Or you're going to burn out, and then you're going to get inconsistent, and then you're not going to do it as frequently. And then it's going
to
have,
and if you hate doing it, it's harder to prioritize.
Yeah.
You know, the thought of posting a video with me talking to the camera on my LinkedIn, it makes my skin crawl, because that's just not who I am. And I, you know, if I try and force myself to do it, I'm going to be miserable the whole time, and it's not going to ever get done in a timely fashion
yeah.
because it's not something I care about or feel comfortable doing.
This has been great.
I think hopefully this is a super valuable topic. I think I've had a blast. I think the cool thing about the mortgage industry is I think it's a opportunity to really stand out, and to, I think it's a blank slate for a lot of people to.
Well, and a little bit goes a long way, I think. I think you can be really effective in this space with your marketing, more so than you can in another industry where everyone's website is gorgeous and professionally designed. You know, there's a lot of room for people to stand out.
And I think there's a lot of benefits that are overlooked in doing this. Those small things not only enhance like your brand that we talk about, but it enhances your company culture and it makes people excited to go to work. Or, you know, there's a lot of different ancillary benefits of having a good marketing strategy that you can't see on the income statement, but really help people inside your organization and out. And that's super important to think about as a leadership team. Thank you guys so much for joining. This has been amazing. I think that this topic could be wildly beneficial for people. Couple quick highlights. We talked about the website a ton. And one of the big takeaways is go find some website crushes, go find LinkedIn crushes or any types of content and start to think about your business. Also, if you want to dip your toe into better graphic design or any aspect of marketing, consider outsourcing with a small team or going to the director at a local college and talking about somebody to build their portfolio with you. Do those things as an introduction and see what the return is. Put yourself out there. Go.
Start experimenting. A/B test some copy on your website.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a ton of opportunity, and I think take it as like a challenge. Like, it's not, there's, marketing is always changing. It's always like what's trendy is always changing. So like, just be open to trying new things and have something you believe in and shout it from the rooftops and always be testing and bettering yourself.
Yeah, learn by doing.
I love it. All right, until next time.
And that's Clear to Close. We hope you enjoyed. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts regularly. As always, you can find the latest episodes by visiting highmaxwell.com/podcasts. And while you're over there, don't be afraid to check out our latest blogs and resource section with ebooks, white papers, and helpful articles. We'll see you guys next time. We're contractually required by our company to mention Maxwell at least once per podcast. Maxwell was created on the principle that mortgage companies will win by betting on the augmentation of human ability, not by replacing with faceless technology. At Maxwell, the power of the human relationship is core to how we build software. Every day, our software is used by hundreds of lenders across the country to serve thousands of home buyers. Mortgages are human, and your tech should be too. To learn more about how Maxwell empowers lenders to close loans 45% faster than the national average and delight their borrowers, visit www.highmaxwell.com or send us an email at meetmax@highmaxwell.com.